Good morning, everyone. Wonderful to see you all here. It's good to be back. There are things about traveling that I absolutely love. One of the things I like best about traveling is coming home to my own bed, because it doesn't matter how great the beds are in the hotels and the bed and breakfasts, and it's just something about your own bed that you're like, I'm home. And we all got home just in time, quite literally, to pack our children and send them to church camp. We were literally, we had like a 24-hour turnaround time where we were still kind of on Italian time, which means we were waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning and ready for bed at 7 p.m., which was fine because that just meant we got an early start to take the kids to church camp. And the church camp that we take our kids to is in West Virginia. So we did the 5-hour drive there, dropped the kids off at church camp, and did the 5-hour drive back. To say that we were slightly tired when we returned was maybe a little bit of an understatement, but that's all right. We were back in time to start our week on Monday and just have our normal week, which we did. Except, of course, there was absolutely nothing normal about this last week for my family. One of the things I want to share with you all, and I share this because she asked us to, was to ask for your prayers. Many of you all know my aunt, who has sort of served as my mother for years and years and years, who came and sang with us on Mother's Day, has had 2 bouts of cancer over the last 5 years, and unfortunately when she went in for her scan this week, they have found cancer again. So she is going to have a surgery, have a full mastectomy, and she would like to have all of your prayers because they've already done 2 rounds of radiation. They can't do any more. So it's surgery this time. So if you can be praying for her and for us, we would greatly appreciate that. And of course, she really loves this congregation. Every time she's been to visit, she says, it's just the friendliest congregation. They're the nicest people. You are so lucky to be in this congregation. I said, I know, they're really great people. And she said, well, I want those folks praying for me. I said, well, I'll pass that along. I'm sure they will. So needless to say, that was a bit of a blow over the week to receive that information. But that is the nature of life. There's always a storm on the horizon. And sometimes when we hear these things, it's just a foretaste of the storm to come. So we hear from my aunt that she's going to have to go back in for medical treatment, and she's having all of the feelings one has in that situation. The certainty that her doctors are excellent, and they are, that God is good and he'll get her through it, and he will, but also the frustration of, once more this is interrupting my life, once more this is threatening my life, once more this is changing all my plans, and all the frustration and sorrow and sadness and all that goes with that, mixed in with the certainty and the hope and the peace that comes from knowing that our Lord is a Lord of the storm. And so as a family, we're expressing this to one another, talking about it, we're thinking about it. But in the meantime, the normal day-to-day challenges of life continue on. On Tuesday, we get a phone call from my oldest daughter. She is in Cuyahoga Falls. And she says, Dad, when you press your brakes, should it make a flopping noise? And we said, no, when you push your brakes, it should not make a flopping noise. Can you describe the flopping? Like a clanking, grinding, clicking, flopping noise. I said, no, that's really bad. Where are you? She says, well, I'm just a block from the house and at a gas station. I said, well, turn around and go home. I said, that's not good, but of course, the mechanic we use there in town was already closed for the day. I said, first thing in the morning, go back, drive it as far as the mechanic, who's just the end of the road, and leave your car there, because that's not something you want your car to do. And when I say her car, I mean my car, because technically speaking, I own that car. She's driving it. So it's one of the cars that I own that my children drive. So she said, okay, well, it comes back that there's a problem with the caliper and the brake shoes and the blah, 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 blah. But it's going to take a couple of days for it to get fixed, and so she is temporarily without the vehicle. My middle daughter, Hannah, comes over to the house on Wednesday, and she says, "Dad, I'm going to get the oil changed on the car, because I've got really low oil. I feel like I just had that done, but I'm going to have to do it again." I said, "Okay." She says, "And the air conditioning's not working again." I said, "Well, I've got some refrigerant in the garage. Let me see if I can charge it." And I go out to charge it, but there's already an adequate charge. And I was like, "That's not good. That probably means it's your compressor." And she says, "Okay." Well, as she goes to leave, I notice the car doesn't want to start. And she finally gets to start. I said to her, "Has it been doing that much?" She says, "Only when it's really hot out." I said, "So all the time." Because of course, this last week we were hotter than Florida. I don't know how that works. I kept checking the weather in Orlando. And I'm like, the weather in Shelby should not be hotter than the weather in Orlando. Yet somehow we were. So she takes the car into our mechanic on Wednesday, and because she had Wednesday off, it's a federal holiday, she's hanging out with my wife, I get the phone call. She doesn't get the phone call from the mechanic, I do. Because again, it's my car that she's driving. And the mechanic says, "Well, I didn't want to call your daughter with this news." And I was like, "Well, I don't like the way this is starting." He says, "Well, I know why her car is just not got enough oil. Her oil pump has seized up." So, "Well, that's not good." He says, "Well, I know why the air conditioning's not working. She's got a cracked air compressor." I said, "Well, that's really, really not good." He says, "And by the way, we had to push it into the shop because the starter died on it." And I said, "Okay." And I said, "Well, is that all?" And my mechanic's name is Mike, and he's kind of a sad guy all the time, so his voice always sort of sounds like he's down about something. And he says, "Well, no." He says, "The engine block's cracked." I said, "Mike, what's this going to cost me?" He says, "Between $6,000 and $8,000. And I said, "It's a 2007 Honda. It's not worth $6,000. It's got 200,000 miles on it." He says, "Yes, but if we do the work, it's basically a new car under the hood." I said, "Or, go with me on this, we buy another car." He says, "That's what I would do." So they pushed the car out, because of course, still not running. They pushed the car out and put it in the parking lot. So I get to call my daughter and say, "Your car has died. We will not be able to bring this one back. It's just done." She says, "What am I going to do? I still have to work Thursday and Friday." I say, "Here's what we're going to do. I'll drive Mom's van for what I have to do. You drive my car. You just have to be aware that my car is only good for short distances because it's burning oil really bad right now. Because it also has 200,000 miles and it's like 20 years old. But I don't know why, but it's fine for short trips. Just keep the oil in it." She says, "Okay, I can do that." Now here's the thing, my two youngest kids are still at camp 5 hours away in West Virginia. We're down two cars now. But we've got the van, and it's fine, and my daughter has my car, and it's drivable. So we go through the rest of the week, and we drive to pick the kids up from camp, and it's a 10-hour drive, so we're going to break this up. Friday, we're going to drive 5 hours, and we're going to stay at a hotel near the camp, pick the kids up, and then drive home. And our trip takes us through Hocking Hills, which is a beautiful location my wife and I love. And there's a really great restaurant there in Lancaster that we're going to stop at. If you're ever in Lancaster, go to the Cherry Street Pub and get the peanut butter and jelly wings. They sound awful. They're incredible. I highly recommend it. And we're making a day trip of this. We're having fun. You know? And we leave Lancaster, we get on 33 and we're going, and a light comes on the van that's never come on. It says, "Check charging system." Check charging system, that's never happened before. So my wife gets on her phone and Googles that. She says, "Well, it's either going to be the battery, the belt, or the alternator." I said, "Those all sound bad." She says, "Well, according to this, you can take it to AutoZone and get it checked out." Okay, Logan is coming up in just a few miles. We pull off into Logan, we go to AutoZone, and they come out and they're like, "Your battery's fine, your belt's fine, your alternator's dead." I said, "What does that mean?" I said, "Well, you have 40% on your battery." I said, "How far do you think that'll get us?" And she said, "Maybe across town." For reference, at this point, it is 5 p.m. on Friday. We have to pick our children up at 8 a.m. on Saturday. We're now 3 hours away from where we want to go. We say, is anybody open? So, well, there's this one place on the far side of town that's open till 6. Maybe you can get there. We get there and we coast in because the electrical systems die on the car in the last 15 foot. We get there and the guy's like, well, I have one alternator, but I don't have the time to do it today. And we kind of gave him this look like, you gotta be kidding. He's like, I can stay late. Thank goodness. He comes out and he says, bad news, the alternator they shipped me is defective. Okay, might be able to get one on Saturday afternoon. So we're picking the kids up at the camp at 8:30. He says, I can't help you. So we call my daughter Hannah, who's pet sitting the animals. Hannah, you now have the last functioning car in the family. You know, the one that I specifically said is only good for short trips. Would you drive 5 hours to come pick us up? So she comes to get us. And by this point, the nice guy running the auto shop place has driven us to a restaurant because it's 8 o'clock at night. So Hannah gets there about 9:30 in the car that again is burning oil. By the way, we're now going to have to put 5 people in my small car with all their stuff from camp when we pick the kids up. So we're waiting at the restaurant and Hannah calls and says, Dad, the car's making a strange grinding, flapping noise. Is that good? I said, what do you mean the car's making a strange grinding, flapping noise? She says, I don't know. The faster I go, the more it makes a noise. I said, where are you? She says, I'm on the interstate. I've just pulled off to the side. I said, where's the nearest exit? She says, right in front of me. I said, get off the exit. She gets off the exit. I said, I want it. As she's getting off the exit, she says, oh, no, it's fine. I apparently just picked up a piece of road debris. It must have gotten lodged under the front wheel well, which, by the way, if you go out and see my car, somehow it managed to lodge under both front wheel wells and completely torn them both to pieces. But it's drivable. So she comes and gets us, and we get into our hotel about 1 a.m. And we get up the next morning at 7, and we go pick the kids up. We get home, stop twice to put oil in the car. We've deemed this week Carmageddon. It was the day in which every vehicle in our household decided that it was no longer going to be with us. The van, by the way, is still in Logan. At some point, it will get repaired and we'll drive back to get it. Storms. I can guarantee you that for no particular reason in life, you will unquestionably face storms. Not rain. Rain is when one car breaks down. Not heavy rain. Heavy rain is when two cars break down. You will face storms, which is when 4.5 or 3.5 of your 4 cars break down. You will face storms when, for no particular reason, you get cancer for a third time. Life is guaranteed to storm. And here's the great part about it. You will never know when it's going to happen. There is not a weather predicting program out there that will say to you, oh, by the way, shortly, all of your vehicles are simultaneously going to die within a 4-day period. Doesn't happen. Jesus, when he is with his disciples, has a moment of discipline with them. When they come to him, and again, he's napping on a cushion. I take this as a sign that naps are holy. Jesus is napping on a cushion in the midst of a storm, so clearly he's not bothered by it. And they come to him and they say, don't you care that we're perishing? Why are you still asleep? And Jesus' response is basically like, why didn't you wake me up sooner? I could have dealt with this Why didn't you ask for help before this point? I am here to take upon myself your storms. And this is the most important learning that I think we can take away from this passage. And that is that storms will happen in our lives. They're unavoidable. At some point, you will have everything go wrong for no conceivable reason. In those moments, like the disciples, you will become absolutely aware of your inability to change reality. Because the storms are simply happening to you and there's nothing you can do to stop them from coming. Christ came to take upon himself our storms. He came to shoulder the burden of that which we cannot carry for ourselves. He came to give us comfort in the midst of our worst moments, to give us strength when we're out of strength, to give us hope when we're out of hope, to give us promises that we will be carried through the worst of what we're facing when we can't walk through it ourselves. All he asks of us, the only thing that he asked of the disciples, was that we ask for and receive help. That we don't assume that the storm is unfixable. That we don't assume that there is no possible conceivable way for us to get through the awful, horrible thing. That we don't take it upon ourselves to handle the unhandleable, but that instead we ask God to take it in his hands and to give us the hope, the strength, and the guidance to get through it. Because guess what? I got my kids home. I have one functioning vehicle. We have found and procured another vehicle for my middle daughter, Hannah. Katie's car is repaired, and God willing, our mechanic in Logan will fix the van tomorrow. More importantly, we're all home, we're healthy, we're safe, we're happy. Maybe a little tired, but you know what? God got us through it. And he always will. Whether it's Carmageddon, third round of cancer, you name it, because everybody's going to have their own storm that comes and you're not expecting it. And you say to yourself, I can't get through this thing. And that's not an untrue statement if you're doing it by yourself. You can't sometimes face down the storms because they're just too big. But when God is with us, when we ask for, receive, and welcome God's strength, help, and comfort, we can get through things we never thought we could get through. We can face down things we never thought we could face down. Because there is a moment in every Christian's life when you learn to hand your problems over. To say, I've done what I can do. I have made all the decisions I can make. I have made all the choices I can make. I've worked as hard as I can work. And at this point, it's either going to happen or it's not going to happen. At that point, we have to have the ability to simply hand things over to God and say, okay, I trust you now. Give me the strength to face the thing. And then when we do, God carries us the rest of the way. I have a prayer that I say. Every single time I fly, storms. Or at least rain. I have a prayer every time I fly when the wings of the airplane go up and the wheels leave the ground. I have the same prayer I say every single time. I say, well, God, it's in your hands now. I have no control over what happens to this airplane until we touch back down and I walk off of the little jetway. From here on out, I have no control. I trust you. That's my prayer every single time. Because I know There's nothing I can do. And, you know, there's only so much even the pilot can do. From that moment forward, I know that I have to simply trust God. We all have those moments. We all have the storms. We all have the Carmageddons. We all have the third round of cancer. We all have the tragedy where we just don't have the resources. And in those moments, we hand things to God and we say, now you carry it. And guess what? More often than not, God's answer is, what took you so long? I was ready to handle this a week ago. Because God is always there, always ready, always willing, always loving. And no matter how hard the storm is that you're facing, He's always ready to face it with you. Amen.